This is Chris Whippo, and I will be reading to you from the Rantoul Press. Today is January 17th, 2020, and I'll begin with an article titled Laying the Groundwork, Ceremony Officially Starts Sports Complex Project. And there's a picture of dignitaries with shovels in their hands, and this is logged in from Rantoul. The state of Illinois has earmarked $500,000 in capital appropriations for the new $20 million artificial turf sports complex that will be built in West Rantoul. It marks the start for a project that State Senator Scott Bennett, who is a Democrat from Champaign, promises to benefit not only central Illinois, but the state as a whole. Bennett was one of the speakers at an event to formally recognize a construction project Tuesday afternoon. Flanked by heavy equipment, ready to begin the groundwork when conditions permit, a group of close to 30 people of all ages gathered around golden shovels for a groundbreaking ceremony. They were among about 140 people who attended. The sports complex, which is slated for opening next year, is projected to provide an economic booster shot. Said Mayor Chuck Smith, it will be a driving economic force in our community. It will create and allow retail and service development, a total of 82 acres in commercial property and 150 acres of residential property. The overall possibilities are unlimited. Bennett must be warm-blooded, braving temps in the low 40s. With brisk winds, Bennett, who wore no coat, said he couldn't really be cold when he saw how many cars and people had showed up for the occasion. He said he remembers his first conversation with Smith, who drove him around town and told him of his memories and vision for the town. Bennett remembers the Rantoul of yesteryear when he would catch a weekend movie at the Wings Theater and thinner days working out at Forum Fitness Center. The town for years was also home to Chanute Air Force Base. While the Forum is still going strong, the Wings and Chanute Air Force Base are long gone. It's time for the town to move ahead, said Bennett and several other speakers. The ceremony marked the second held in West Rantoul this month. On January 3rd, a ribbon-cutting grand opening was held at the new Shields Auto Center north of the sports complex site. State Representative Mike Marin, a Republican from Fithian, said he hopes Tuesday's groundbreaking is the first of many in Rantoul looking ahead to economic development. This really is a key moment that ushers in a new era in the story of Rantoul, a story I've been following for a long time, Marin said. It's really an event that marks a turning point where we have a lot of really, really good things that are starting to happen in this community. Recreation Department Director Luke Humphrey said the ceremony took place almost to the day on the one-year anniversary of when he started putting pencil to paper on an idea that had been sitting on the shelf for many years. The sports complex, which is projected to draw traveling sports teams from a 400-mile radius, will also be geared toward local residents. Village officials have said the complex will be open to rec department and other community-related activities, including baseball, softball, soccer, football, and other sports. Rantoul Township High School Athletic Director Travis Flessner said the village has made it clear that it wants to involve local youth. The village really wants to work with us and help get our sports out there, Flessner said, noting that there have been talks regarding baseball, softball, and soccer possibly playing at the complex. We would love to play some of our games out there, and playing on artificial turf would be awesome. Them reaching out to us and other local schools and teams show us that they want us and the community to be able to benefit from this and not just travel teams from outside of the area. Rennick Riddle, a student at Rantoul's J.W. Eater Junior High School, was one of four Eater students who took part in the groundbreaking. He said planned construction of the sports complex excites him because it's going to give us a better option for sports. Riddle, who plays baseball, and other area youth athletes are also excited by the prospect. Enter student Olivia Dubusky said she is on a traveling softball team and estimated she plays 30 games a year. I was excited, she said when she heard about the facility. Bennett said the new facility will draw people from a wide area, people who want to spend the weekend with family. They don't want to go to Chicago and Indianapolis. They want to spend their money right here where they make it, Bennett said. The sports complex will be paid for from private contributions, sponsorships, donations, and grants, with a bulk of the funding coming from bonds paid from income generated by the village's increment funding financing fund. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said there is a great possibility of seeing additional state dollars for the project, and federal grant and foundation dollars might also be forthcoming. Eisenhower said the village has been in talks with companies interested in sponsorships. He said those talks will now ramp up with the groundbreaking ceremony and Bennett's announcement of the $500,000 state contribution. Available sponsorships would come in the form of naming rights for the fields, and in parentheses it says paying for half the cost of a field would total $1.5 to $2.2 million. The park as a whole, scoreboards, concession stands, and signage. People who hadn't really initially thought of, have been thought of for a sponsorship, have been very interested in being a part of it, Eisenhower said. We have been surprised, just as I think we'll be surprised, by the number of different ways the park is used. He said the village has been pleased with numbers from some of the early bids in construction. Mid-Illinois Concrete Excavation, a local firm, got the bid for the site excavation, Eisenhower saying it came in below the amount budgeted. After site work excavation, the underground work will begin for sewer lines and utilities. And this was from written by the Rantoul Press sports editor Ryan Birch. And that's the end of that article. The next article is titled, Gibson City Man Convicted of 9 Counts of Unlawful Possession of a Weapon by a Felon. And this is by Will Brumley of Ford County Record from Paxton. And the article begins, a convicted felon from Gibson City who had access to guns and ammunition purportedly owned by his father was convicted this week of 9 counts of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon and faces a mandatory prison term when sentenced in March. A 12-member jury deliberated for about 30 minutes Tuesday before returning the verdict against Noah P. Ringle, age 37, following a one-day trial in Ford County Circuit Court. Judge Matt Fitton immediately ordered Ringle into the custody of the Ford County Sheriff's Office until he is sentenced at 10 a.m. March 26th. Ringle faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 2 to 10 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Ringle, who has a felony domestic battery conviction from Tazewell County in 2006, allegedly possessed a Remington shotgun, a Ruger Mini 14 rifle, and a Magnum Research 1911G pistol, along with various ammunition at his home at 406 South Church Street in Gibson City in October 2017. After receiving information about the weapons and confirming Ringel's status as a convicted felon, Gibson City police officers executed a search warrant at the residence, finding a large gun safe, which held the firearms and ammunition. During his trial, Ringle and his father, William Ringle, both testified that the safe, the firearms, and the ammunition belonged to the elder Ringle, who also stayed in the home. They both testified that the younger Ringle did not know the combination to the safe and therefore could not access its contents. However, state's attorney Andrew Killian presented testimony showing that on at least one occasion, Noah Ringle had opened the safe and handled two of the firearms while showing them off to a friend. Further, Gibson City Police Captain Caleb Kraft testified that while police were executing the search warrant, Noah Ringel provided Kraft the combination to the safe over the telephone. Noah Ringel was not at home at the time. Other items recovered from the safe included copies of Noah Ringel's birth certificate, along with those of his two children and two sets of ear protection used in shooting that were labeled Noah. In his closing argument, Killian told the jury that if the story about seeing Ringel handle the firearms from the safe was made up by his friend, as Ringel argued, then the friend would not have been able to correctly describe the unique characteristics of the rifle and pistol that were aftermarket additions to both guns. The witness was able to accurately describe to the police and again to the jury that the 1911 pistol, 1911 pistol, had been equipped with a rubber grip over the original wood grips and a stainless steel flash suppressor slash compensator, Killian said in a news release. He also described the rifle had been fitted out with a bipod to assist in long-range shooting from a prone position. Killian also argued that ownership of the guns and ammunition was irrelevant to the legal question of possession. The law does not require an individual owns a gun, which felons are prohibited from doing, in order to show that they possessed it or ammunition, Killian said. It only requires the state demonstrate the felon handled the items or had the ability to access the guns or ammunition. After Fitton read the 9 guilty verdicts aloud, Killian asked that Ringel be immediately taken into police custody, arguing that the Class 3 felony convictions require a mandatory prison sentence and that Ringel no longer had the right to remain free on bond. Killian also cited the fact that Ringel had been charged in Ford County Circuit Court with felonious domestic battery on January 13th, and if convicted of that offense, Ringel would need to serve any prison sentence he receives in that case consecutively to the sentence he receives in this case. Agreeing with Killian, Fitton ordered Ringel into police custody until his sentencing. In addition to the mandatory prison term, Ringel could be fined up to $25,000 per count and have the firearms and ammunition surrendered. In his news release, Killian praised the work of Gibson City Police, including Chief Adam Rosendahl, Kraft, former Officer Victor Crouch, and the late Lieutenant Tony Rowe. That's R-O-W. Chief Rosendahl, Captain Kraft, and the other officers from Gibson City responded quickly to the information they received, and in doing so, they removed three firearms and hundreds of rounds of ammunition from an individual with multiple prior violent offenses, Killian said. Their combined effort in executing the search warrant, recognizing the importance of and documenting the items tying Noah Ringel to the guns and ammunition, and the testimony of Kraft and the other witnesses for the state in front of the jury sealed the conviction. Ringel was represented by Bloomington attorney Todd Ringel, no relation of the Johnson Law Group. And that's the end of that article. Okay, I'm going to move on to the obituaries. Again, this is from the Rantoul Press from January 17th. The first one is Kimmy Jones, that's K-I-M-M-Y, Jones, age 41, of Rantoul, died Monday, January 13th, 2020, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Williams Memorial Services at 1203 North Market Street in Champaign. The next obituary is that of Christy Miller, K-R-I-S-T-Y, Miller. Christy L. Miller, age 54, of Champaign, mother of a Rantoul resident, died Friday, January 10, 2020, after a battle with cancer. A celebration of life gathering will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, January 17, with law enforcement honor guard ceremony and walkthrough at 5 p.m. at Rosenbaum Funeral Home at 925 North Illinois Street, North Illinois, Route 47 in Gibson City. The family has requested casual attire for the celebration of life gathering. The next obituary is that of Carter Finefield / Miller. Millar, I'm going to spell this. Carter is K-A-R-T-E-R. Finefield is F-I-N-E-F-I-E-L-D. And then with a hyphen, I'm sorry, Millar, M-I-L-L-A-R. Carter Finefield Millar of St. Joseph was born Friday, January 10th, 2020 at 11:22 p.m. and at 1 a.m. on Saturday, January 11th, died in his parents' arms at Prentice Women's Hospital at Northwestern Memorial in Chicago. Free's Funeral Home, 302 East Grand Avenue in St. Joseph, will be in charge of arrangements including a graveside service, a private graveside service, which will be held at a later date. The next obituary is that of Rodney Young of Champaign. Rodney was a graduate of Lincoln's Challenge Academy in Rantoul. He died at 9:06 p.m., January 8, 2020. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 18th at Stone Creek Church in Urbana. Burial will be at 11 a.m. Monday, January 20th at Mount Hope Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 1215 West Bradley Avenue in Urbana. The next obituary is that of Carol Nunn, that's N-U-N-N. Carol A. Nunn, age 65, of Champaign, sister of two Fisher residents, died at 5:20 p.m. Saturday, January 11th, 2020 at University Rehab Center in Urbana. Memorial services will be at 5 p.m. Thursday, January 16th at Owens Funeral Home in Champaign. The Reverend Bob Rasmus will officiate and burial will be held at private at a later date. And visitation was Thursday, 3 to 5 p.m. at the funeral home. And that is all of the current obituaries that we have to read today. The next article's title is Fisher Bill Hike Notice Sent in Error. This is by Carol Tilmany, Rantoul Press correspondent. And it's logged in from Fisher. The Fisher Village Board wants the 782 Fisher Ameren customers who recently received an insert in their Ameren bill statements indicating that the village would increase its municipal utility tax rate to know that this was incorrect. The notice was sent due to a programming error, and Fisher has not increased its municipal utility tax rate. The error has now been corrected, and affected customers will receive a letter from Ameren informing them of the error. Ameren has apologized, and village officials are prepared to explain the situation in the event of being contacted by residents. And then a subtitle is Aggregation Contract Approved. In a related matter, the board approved a contract with Constellation Energy for electric aggregation. The current one-year agreement with the company is set to expire in February, and residents will pay Constellation at a rate of 4.423 cents per kilowatt hour. This rate is less than the current Ameren rate of 4.715 per kilowatt hour, and the Constellation rate of 4.943 per kilowatt hour under the expiring agreement. As with any aggregation agreement, all customers will be provided with the ability to opt out of the program without incurring a penalty. The proposed contract term would be 1 year, expiring in February 2020. Other board news, sales contract approved. The board approved a sales contract for 106 West Park Street with David Irvin, who owns the adjacent parcel at 108 West Park Street. Irvin will pay $3,600 closing costs and will reimburse the village $550 for the village's legal expenses incurred in connection with the sale. After the sale, Irvin will be responsible for combining his parcels prior to obtaining a permit for any construction on the vacated land. The Fisher Zoning Ordinance does not permit the construction of an accessory structure such as a garage or shed on a parcel within the residential zoning district in the absence of a primary residential structure. The village paid for the demolition of the previous dilapidated structure and restoration of the site. The next subtitle is Parking Nuisances Discussed. The board revisited proposed revisions to the nuisance ordinance, specifically those pertaining to parking nuisances. Those include that each improved residential lot will be provided with one also exempt parking area not to exceed 10 foot by 20 foot that will permit parking on an unimproved surface contiguous to the driveway, provided that this area will be required to be maintained with grass or landscaping materials to prevent muddy and rutted areas in the yard. Vehicles will be permitted to temporarily park on unimproved surfaces during family or social gatherings for a period not to exceed 24 hours. Visitors will be permitted to park on unimproved surfaces for up to 7 days in connection with vacations or family occasions. Vehicles will be permitted to be parked on unimproved surfaces in rear yards, but that abut a street if screened from public viewing by permanent fencing. Recreational vehicles will be permitted to park in rear yards or interior side yards without being required to be parked on an improved parking surface. Recreational vehicles will be permitted to park in a front yard or exterior side yard, corner lots only, on a driveway or improved parking surface. The prohibition against using recreational vehicles as dwelling units is maintained, but a temporary exception is provided for visiting guests for up to 2 weeks. A mechanism is provided to permit for the village board to grant variances to any requirements of the parking section in circumstances where a property owner can demonstrate unique features, such as site, shape, topography, etc., of his or her property that would make strict enforcement of the ordinance present an undue hardship. The board is expected to vote on the revised ordinance next month. Resident Jason Washer spoke to the board because he wanted to know what the parking requirements would be. He noted that his neighbors have three vehicles which they park right to their back porch, leaving ruts all over their yard. The board approved an agreement with Donahue and Associates to provide engineering services for the village's fuel tax program and street maintenance projects. Tom Overmeyer previously handled that work, but he has sold his company and plans to retire soon. Trustee Kevin Henderson said the village has enjoyed a good working relationship with Donahue on previous water and wastewater projects. The firm has added local engineers with backgrounds in managing transportation programs. The base fee for preliminary engineering and inspection is $1,250 plus negotiated rate based upon the percentage of the total project costs. 90% of the village's MFT funds go toward oiling and chipping village streets. The next subgrouping is titled A Call for Recycling. This is the last one. The board heard from resident Kelly McKinley, who asked it to consider implementing a recycling program in town. We need to get serious, and we need to teach our kids, and we need a place, McKinley said. She said she has learned that Area Disposal, the village's garbage contractor, runs a curbside recycling program in Farmer City, where McKinley has family. She said she'd be happy with curbside or central drop-off place. Trustees said Fisher had a drop-off site 10 to 15 years ago, but that it was abused by people who would just drop off garbage. Police Chief Steve Mine outlined the Gibson City's program, where anyone can pay a subscription for twice a month drop-off that is run by volunteers. He still participates. Trustees indicated interest in pursuing the matter. Several Cub Scouts and leaders had attended the meeting, and two of the boys asked questions of the board about lighting at Heritage Pond and the chances of getting another soccer field in town. And that is the end of that group of subjects. The next article is titled, Thomas Burrow makes top cop offer. It is written by Deborah Rawlings. It's about the village board voted 4-1 at the January 6th regular meeting to offer the full-time position of police chief to Eric Shoemate. Under the contract, the board approved Shoemate, a retired Champaign County Sheriff's deputy, will be paid an annual salary of $45,000. He will also receive a monthly health insurance stipend of $700, a 6% 401k match, and a $100,000 term life insurance policy, and a $50 for a cell phone. After the six-month probationary period, the annual salary would be increased by $2,500. Trustee Dustin Rhodes voted against the hiring based on budget concerns. We cannot operate in the black by hiring a full-time position, he said in response to resident Diana Pohlod, P-O-H-L-O-D. We should have dug in a little more and found another way we could do it. It's about money and putting off other projects in town that people want done. Rhodes also balked at offering the life insurance benefit to only one employee. Trustee Tony Grillo paused before voting, saying he didn't like the way the whole process had been conducted. Interviews were done in closed session during a special meeting on January 2nd. It's down to the way too much was done behind closed doors and out of public view. Is this the path we want to go? He asked. Residency was also a concern for Grillo. He would prefer having a police chief move to town. But Trustee Robert Pinsky noted Shoemate lives in St. Joseph, near St. Joseph, and can be in town in 15 minutes. Of the candidates, Shoemate stood out across the board. He's a reasonable candidate. He's here. He has plenty of experience to do the job, Pinsky said, defending Shoemate's selection in spite of his lack of police experience. Longtime resident Gene Johnson supported the board's decision. I lived in Thomasboro before we had any police, Johnson said. It was not any fun. I don't want to go back to that. In today's society, we definitely need police protection. Johnson wanted to know why traffic ticket revenue could not be used to sustain the police department. I used to have a very similar thought that the police department could be self-sustained, Mayor Tyler Evans said, but you can't view policing as a revenue-producing item. There was discussion of requiring goals to be achieved within the probationary period, but no decision was made. Mike Martinez, a Thomasboro part-time patrol officer, has been serving as interim police chief since Robert Ray's resignation as a full-time chief in 2017. Ray held the job for about 5 months. Prior to his hiring, the position had been part-time. And that will wrap this session up for Reading the Ram Tool Press from January 17th. This is Chris Whippo, and I am going to be saying goodbye now. Thank you very much for listening.